All lines are now bridged.
Great, thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Mike Berry. I'm with ONC's Office of Policy, and I'd like to welcome everybody to the US CDI Task Force. We are going to get started with roll call, and then I will turn it over to our co-chairs. Stephen Lane.
I am here.
Is Terry O'Malley on? Ricky Bloomfield. Hans Butendijk.
I'm on. Good morning.
And we have a new member to our task force, Grace Cordovano. No, Grace was having
Mike
audio.
Mike, isn't it?
Yes?
Correct. Yep.
And Stephen will be introducing Grace after we get started. Leslie Kelly Hall.
Good morning. Thank you.
Jim Gerges. Ben Kalamoto.
Good morning.
Les Leonard. Glenn McDonald. I know Aaron Mary is not able to join us today, and neither is Brett Oliver. Mark Savage.
Good morning.
Michelle Schreiber.
Good morning.
Sasha Termott.
Good morning.
Andy Truscott. Cheryl Turney.
Good morning.
Dan Breeman.
Hello.
And finally, Denise Webb.
Good morning.
Good morning to all. Okay, thank you. And I'll turn it over to Stephen.
Thank you so much, Mike, and thank you everyone who was able to join us this morning. A number of folks are dealing with weather issues and other challenges. We have had a, I think we mentioned last time, a resignation from the committee that which created a new space within our group. And Grace Cordovano, who has been attending our meetings since the beginning and who a number of members suggested as a helpful voice to join our discussion, has very kindly agreed to join us officially. So this is not her first meeting, but it's her first one where she has her mic turned on. So Grace, do you want to just take a second and introduce yourself if you can, or maybe the mic hasn't made it yet, but Grace is a patient advocate professionally, and I think board certified, I understand, and very much active in the patient space. So I think we'll bring a helpful voice to our discussion in addition to those we already have.
Good morning.
There you are. I think you brought a little echo with you too. Can you want to try again, Grace?
I think I got it this time. I apologize.
Perfect. You want to introduce yourself briefly?
Yes. Good morning, everyone. I'm Grace Cordovano. I'm a board-certified patient advocate specializing in the oncology space. My day-to-day is working with patients and their families from point of diagnosis through survivorship or end-of-life care planning. I help people navigate their diagnosis predominantly in the oncology space, but as you all know, because someone gets a cancer diagnosis, it does not give them a clean bill of health. So all of the comorbidities and social determinants of health come along for the ride. So I essentially help people navigate their diagnosis as well as the fragmentation that is our healthcare system. And as you all may know, a lot of that is rooted in having actionable, seamless, successful access to their health information throughout their care journey. I'm absolutely thrilled to be here. Thanks for having me.
Great. Thank you so much, Grace. Also, Terry O'Malley, just looking at our list, still has not had a chance to join us. Terry has told us that he's had some issues come up in his personal life that are going to prevent him from continuing to participate in our task force, unfortunately. And he was going to try to come this morning to let you all know that himself, but that obviously didn't happen so far. If he does, we'll give him a moment, but suffice to say that we are going to be seeking out another co-chair. We do have a candidate from amongst our membership who's also a member of the HITAC. I think we'd like the co-chair to be from the HITAC. I don't think it's an absolute requirement. I recall being on FACA task forces in the past where one of the co-chairs was not a HITAC member, but be that as it may, any of you who are particularly interested in the potential opportunity to help co-chair this task force as we move forward over the course of the year, please let us know, and we'll be trying to sort that out between now and the next meeting. All right. So in terms of our meeting notes, I believe we completed the notes from our first but not our second meeting. Is that right, Mike?
Right.
And those have been posted to the website. Is that correct?
I believe so. I'll check with Katie. Katie, have those been posted yet, the first week meeting, to the portal or the website?
Yes. Yeah.
Wonderful. So I think our plan is to, we have three rounds of review on those before we put them up, and then they will be put on the website. I don't know, Katie, it doesn't seem like we have a specific plan to let people know when the meeting notes have been posted. We could do that if people felt strongly about it, I imagine, but that's where they're going to be. We're going to try to turn them around as quickly as possible so people ideally would have a chance to review the notes from the prior meeting before the current meeting, especially for those who can't make it. I know that's very helpful. So that'll be our goal, and we'll see how we do with that, but I don't think we were planning to do a formal, you know, approval of the minutes. We're planning to simply get them up there and let you know that they're there. Did I have that right, Mike?
Yes, Stephen, you got that right. Thanks.
Perfect. Okay, very good. So let's jump in with both feet to our work. Let's go ahead to our slide 3, just reviewing our task force charges for everyone who is here. Also, I want to specifically welcome the members of the public who have joined our meeting. We see a number of folks here. I want to actually thank Shelley Spiro, who provided us some public comments at a recent meeting. That's a great way to get your comments into the public record. And Shelley, we thank you for that. Any of you who are members of the public and attend this meeting are welcome to provide public comments toward the end of the meeting. We very much appreciate that. Also, before we sort of jump in here, I want to remind folks that the co-chairs, with the help of Andy Truscott, made a number of specific outreaches to members of the community and asked them to provide us with early input regarding the USCDI version 2. A number of people have come forward with that, and in working with our colleagues at ONC, we've learned that really that input, we couldn't just forward it to people or post it on a Google Drive. It needs to be made part of the public record for us to be able to share it with folks. So people who sent those have been invited to enter them as comments directly on the website. I'm looking at Dan's smiling face here this morning, and Dan, I think, mentioned to us last time that he had prepared some comments, and he was successful in uploading those to the website. Mark also did the same, and a number of other folks, our friends from Kaiser, recently provided some very helpful input, and I think just this morning they uploaded that to the website. So those, as you're doing your review of the draft version 2 and of the individual data classes and data elements, please go to the website, scroll down to the bottom of each of the pages, look for those comments, because that's where those are being placed. Dan, did you want to add anything to that?
No. Well, yes. One thing is, in my own opinion, it's nice when the comments are sort of, it's nicer when the comments are in line with the data class or the data element, as opposed to just being kind of blanket at the top of the page, which you can do if you're sort of have a whole bunch of things to say. But at least, you know, as we're reviewing, it's nice you can just pull up that sort of collection and see the specific ones there. If you're so inclined to go to that extra effort, I always find it helpful.
Yep, I agree. I think it is nice. I know I think I mentioned last time I've had a chance to put in some individual comments, and we invite you all to do that as you see fit. All right. So with no further ado, and thank you for those of you who have acknowledged your presence in the public chat, Jim, Clem. Thank you for joining us, Ricky, as well. So this is, again, our charge. We've enumerated the various charges. You will all recall that we pretty much, I think, have had our way with charge 1A, looking at data classes and elements from US CDI version 1 and the applicable standards version updates that have been proposed by ONC. If people have additional comments that arise that they want to bring forward there, I think we can certainly discuss those here. I know, Dan, some of your comments did have to do with version 1 data elements and classes, and those have been added to the website. So I think we're hoping today to dig into task 1B, which is to say the new data classes and elements from the draft version 2 and the applicable standards that have been attached to those, recalling that thereafter we are going to focus in on 1C, the level 2 data classes, the proposed data classes and elements that were leveled as level 2 but not included in draft US CDI version 2. I will point out that I think a lot of the people who have attended these meetings and have spoken up have been focused on the sort of the notion that the draft V2 is very skinny and doesn't include a lot of news compared to version 1. I will point out that some of the public comment that we've received in response to outreach says, you know, just the opposite. Says, you know, it's really good that we kept that so small, that the industry and the vendors and the providers really are not in a mood to take on a lot more. So it's good to have a diversity of voices covering that material. Let's go to the next slide, slide 4 in the deck that was distributed. This is a representation of a Google Sheets doc that, or maybe it's an Excel doc, I can't remember, but it's been posted up on the Google Drive for all of the members of the task force. And the idea here is that we're going to use this for record keeping as we go through and have our discussions. A number of people have made specific points about changes that they would like to see made and the reasons, the justification for those changes. What we'd like to do is start to capture those in this document. Everybody who is on the task force should have been asked to forward whatever email you use to access documents on a Google Drive, and you should have been granted the access to this document on the drive. Katie or others from Excel, can you comment on how well we're doing getting people access to the document?
Yes, this is Katie. I think we have a bit over half of the members, but if anyone has not replied with their Gmail account, they can just send it to me and I can give you access.
And I think the access that we're granting is edit access. Is that true?
It's commenter access.
Comment access. Okay, so at this point, then, that means that our plan is that the ONC team and the co-chairs, or co-chair at the moment, will be adding information to this, and we'll give people the opportunity to add comments. Again, what we want to do is, without making this just a craziness of too many cooks in the kitchen, we do want to capture people's input, use this to build a listing of our, you know, key findings as we go along, and then use that later on in the year when we construct our feedback to the HITACH and ONC. Any questions about that? Jim, you said, what email do I send the email to? You want to respond to that, Katie?
Yes, I'm just typing it in the chat now.
Okay, perfect. All right, good. All right. Any other questions about that? All right. don't see any hands raised, don't see any comments. We will move ahead. All right, so slide five, the next slide, is going to become very familiar to everybody. This is the draft US CDI version two, showing all of the data elements and classes that were in version one, plus the additions and changes that have been brought forward for version two. And I think unless somebody has a better suggestion, the best way to approach this will probably be to simply take these in order. So let's make sure that we've covered. Okay, so let's hop down to, before we take them in order, let's start with the reclassifications. And again, I think we covered this last time, but I just want to make sure that there aren't any residual comments. So hop to slide seven. All right, so this describes the movement, the reclassification of three specific types of clinical notes into two new data classes for diagnostic imaging and laboratory, and we move the notes over. Clem, I think, led us in a lively discussion last time about potential redundancy in these. I think, Dan, some of your comments also spoke to some of the challenges of these, and I would really invite people to go read Dan's comments. They're quite thoughtful. Dan, I think we lost you before you covered this last time. I actually can't remember whether you covered this particular piece last time. Did you want to add anything based on your thoughts?
So I made comments both about the laboratory report narrative and the PATH report narrative, not about the organization or the movement per se, but putting now sort of in this new context, there are a couple of issues that come to mind. First is related to the laboratory report, and this is probably likely part of what Clem discussed earlier, is how does this actually relate to the result values, right? And not being sort of anchored to, is this like an entire report with multiple observations? Is this the conclusion, the interpretation, et cetera? So some clarity on that. And in many ways, it might just be redundant if it's meant to be things that are reported as narrative that show up as, you know, OBX5 or observation dot value. The second is the language around for pathology report. I think we should think a little bit, and I tried to write this up, we should think a little bit more precisely about how we label that. The addition of narrative in this context is a little confusing because PATH reports typically take three sort of structures, or they vary in sort of narrative to structured to this fully synoptic category, and I've linked to some references that describe that more completely. And by the use of the word narrative here, we might be miscuing people that only some subset of those, i.e. those that are sort of free text-like, are meant, when I think what we really mean is that entire sort of scope of data, regardless of its underlying structural representation.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, my sense personally, and I'll ask Al to comment, is that the context here is that we want not only quantitative, you know, discrete data fields, but we also want to capture the narrative. We don't want to lose any of it, whether we're talking about lab, PATH, imaging, and I think that's kind of the spirit of these data elements. But I think you make such a good point, Dan, which is that when you get down to the actual programming, you know, what does that mean? What segment of the message does it go in? What part of the report does it go in? And what exactly is being requested? But maybe, Al, you can comment, because we've certainly seen a number of commenters make note of some lack of absolute clarity on these.
Sure. I think the most important thing that we want to convey is that we, by moving, as understanding that each of these three data elements could very easily be part of the diagnostic imaging report or the lab report, and that both of those elements have narrative components in them already. But when we didn't fully define in USCDI what a lab report or a diagnostic imaging report should contain or how it should be structured. And so what we didn't want to do is have the capability to, you know, capture or exchange a diagnostic imaging report that doesn't have any narrative components to it, has only structured data elements, and still qualify as a diagnostic imaging report. So our original intent with adding clinical notes was to be able to capture the rich narrative that accompanies any of these clinical note types. And then simply reclassifying them didn't change the fact that we still want narrative components of lab, path, and diagnostic imaging to be able to be exchanged, captured and exchanged. So I hear loud and clear the comments, valid comments about perhaps these are duplicated, but we didn't want to lose the concept that we want narrative in all of these categories to be able to be shared.
So this is Clem. Can you hear me? Am I on voice?
Yes, Clem. Clem. Go ahead.
Would like to weigh in. I mean, I think this could be a disaster for confusing the whole world, these two kinds of, and they apply differently to the different ones. So laboratory reports are typically are structured, but one of those structures might be final impression, and that would be text. So that creates a confusion. The bigger problem is this will give an opportunity to every company that doesn't want to worry about structuring coding to use a single code and send all laboratories as one glob, which will destroy all the progress we've made over the last 15 years. So I think it could really be bad because you got one code for laboratory narrative, and a lot of places would like you to send blobs, you know, of text. And so we really ought to change this radically and maybe just highlight that reports could be pure narrative or not, but use the standard codes, whichever you use for the ordering test, either way. So in radiology or in imaging, it's almost worse. Oh, it's different because in imaging, they almost never are structured. They're almost nice narrative, you know, things that are coherent. Sometimes they'll be broken into separate sections, you know, separate little sub-records for the impression and the description, et cetera. But those will have a different confusion because people will go, well, I guess I got to wait till I get a structured one before I use any of the specific codes for chest X-ray or lung CT or any of those things, and I'll just use this one single code, which again will make it harder for receivers to use the data. So I think it's got to be totally rethought, and I would it's got double, triple confusions in it.
So I think Clem, really what you're saying is that we need to make sure that we clarify in USCDI version 2 just what's meant here, that the narrative, whether we're talking about lab or path, is in addition to the discrete data elements. It's not as an alternative to those. And I think if we do that well, we should be okay without having to, quote, rethink the whole thing.
Well, I don't know about that because you've given a single line code which suggests an overarching thing that's going to get sent as one unit. It doesn't really admit or acknowledge the parts, the fact some pieces are narrative, some are structured, any of that. I think it's going to be a big step backward unless it's restated completely differently.
Perfect. Perfect.
Yeah, Clem, I appreciate the comments, and I hear your concern about the possible confusion in having both lab report and lab report narrative, and the same thing for diagnostic imaging. We haven't gotten rid of the idea that we want a diagnostic imaging report, complete report, whether that's structured, unstructured, or a combination. But I think that there might be some room to improve the definitions for each of the narrative, for the narrative elements and the report elements, to be clear that if we decide to combine them, then we want to make sure that the lab report, the laboratory report, at least has the capability of conveying narrative as well.
No, no, Grace. I think that's a good idea. Oh. And I think that could be done by a comment rather than by making a whole new thing. You know, just explain it. But anyway, I
Grace has her hand up. You want to jump in, Grace?
Yes, thank you. In catching up here, and I apologize if this has been covered in the past, I am still struggling with trying to understand the report and narrative. One of my comments from a big picture is when I review this draft two and you start going through the data classes and elements, there's no real world sort of examples to demonstrate and illustrate what these elements and classes may look like in the real world. My one comment would be, is there a way to use synthetic data to show snapshots? Because someone new walking in or someone from the public may not have the privilege of the understanding of all of these spaces. And that sort of ties in with my question on when you're talking about report and narrative, where is this narrative that is being referred to? Can you give me an example or illustrate in a screen share where this would appear? Because I've been doing this for quite some time and I've never seen narrative called out. It's usually impression or findings.
Thanks. Hans?
Yeah, thank you. I want to extend a little bit more of what Clem indicated on the separation or the combination of narrative and the report. I think by having introduced it as a separate notion, it increases the risk that people are going to think of it as differently. So I would certainly encourage that we look at it as a report and clarify within that data element or that concept that there are narrative, impressions, structure, encoding, that those aspects are in there. And what we're looking for is that has a good balance and is properly reflective of it and is not absent of any narrative where there should be. Just mentioning them and listing them separately will have people interpret them as I have to do something else as well, as opposed to I need to create a better report.
Yeah, thank you, Hans. And I think we are covering some material that we also discussed last week. So let's look for some new insights, because I think poor Al has heard this loud and clear at this point. Ricky, you want to add?
I made a comment in the chat as well. At a high level, typically this level of granularity in terms of guidance would come in the implementation guide development process. And so I'm wondering if we believe that our guidance to ONC for the USCDI should have this level of granularity, which typically hasn't existed within the USCDI before, or if we should share that with HL7, you know, to be included in additional guidance within US Core. Because it seems like it's a little bit of a change in how USCDI has been perceived thus far. And I want to make sure we're providing the most effective guidance. And if we do decide to include this level of granularity in USCDI, I think that's great. I think we just need to decide where that feedback goes.
And Ricky, wouldn't, you know, you said include in US Core, but also presumably in CDA and as needed in V2, right? I mean, it's not just
sure,
not
yeah,
just related
wherever
fire.
It's applicable.
Yeah. All right. Dan, your hand's up.
I was going to say, I agree with Hans, second that. Second, I think I want to emphasize Clem's point in that the way these are referred to in USCDI today suggests that a single code could be used across all diagnostic imaging reports, narratives, or lab reports or path reports. We absolutely don't want that. We want the more precise coding for each of the specific things that are done. And so that I want to double emphasize, I'm with him on that.
Perfect. And Leslie, you found the hand-raising function. Go.
Yeah, I would just say that if we take the precedent of establishing new standards here, we're bypassing processes that already exist and already vet in significant ways. And so I think this is not the place to be doing this. And furthermore, the problem that was stated that we're trying to solve was the fact that these reports were so large. Breaking them up in a way that could create unintended consequences by having the context separate from the narrative is not responsible as well. And I think the fact that we are all confused and concerned and we live this is an example of how confusing this could be to the industry.
So I think to sort of bring this to a bit of a close, Grace, I hadn't seen that hand clapping feature. That's very cute. I think that what we should do is come up with some draft language that might become a part of our report back to HITAC that tries to capture what it is we are trying to say here. Any of us could draft that. For some reason, it sort of feels like Hans and Ricky really have a good handle on this because of their deep involvement in NHL 7. So I don't know if you guys want to kind of take a stab at how to characterize or summarize what it is we're trying to say. If not, you know, you can leave it to me and Al to tinker with. But I think if one of you guys wanted at least just put together a short paragraph or a few sentences that sort of captures that, I'd certainly appreciate that if you were willing. And then what we can do is we can put it into the Google Drive doc the Google Excel file, and then people can comment from there. Would that be okay? And I don't mean to leave anybody out, but I think. Hans and Ricky, can you guys take a stab at that?
Happy to work with Ricky on that.
So I'd be happy to help too if you need them.
I just wanted to keep it simple. That was all. I think if a couple people just put something together and then we'll get it into the drive, and then we can comment from there.
Yeah, I think what would be useful there would be to get all of the notes to make sure we're including all the perspectives that were shared today. And if we can get a summary of those comments, we can use that to draft something. And again, if there's an open way to do this, such as an open Google Doc where everyone can see this draft and we can, you know, edit and comment, that would be really useful. So we have a collaborative approach that is open. And then anyone who wants to weigh in can do that, I think would be great.
It'll be open to all task force members initially, Ricky.
Yeah, exactly. That'd be great.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the plan. Perfect. Trying to keep up with the comments here. Leslie, I think you had a chance. Ken had to leave. Denise, the SNF community is not clear on how USCDI applies to them since they don't use certified health IT for the most part. Good point. And all right, good. So anything else on the reclassification? Again, I think we've covered that well, both last week and this. All right, very good. Let's move back. Oh, and then was there anything else? Pop up to slide 6 for just a moment. Was there anything else that had come to people's minds related to USCDI version 1? Data classes, elements, standards that people wanted to resurface before we consider that one complete. And again, it's a little unfair because you can't read the notes from our prior meeting and we haven't pulled forward the tasks into our spreadsheet, so we'll do all of that. But did anyone have any further thoughts on version 1? Sorry, we're trying to get into a rhythm as we have members dropping away, so we're doing the best we can. All right. Then let's hop to slide 9, where we will focus in on our charge 1B, new data classes and elements. So not the ones that were just moved, but the new ones that were suggested for draft version 2 and their applicable standards. So now if you go to slide 10, we have the short list, just notably short, of new elements that have been proposed. All of you hopefully have had a chance to go onto the website and dig into these, looking at the applicable standards and the comments that have been collected to date. I think, Dan, you did have a comment specific to care team members, and maybe that would be a good place to just kick off the discussion. But why don't we focus first in on care team members I think we've had our way with diagnostic imaging, but there may be more on that, and then we'll eventually get to encounters and problems. So care team members, Dan.
Thanks. So care team members is both a data class and a specific data element. And then the new things that were added were two data elements, one for provider name and another for provider identifier. My concern initially is simply that the significance of sort of labeling these two data elements as being providers has real overlapping meaning with the thing that already existed, which was care team members. It strikes me that we could simplify by simply having two data elements, care team member name and care team member identifier. The sort of significance of labeling something as provider has a number of different implications. There's both sort of regulatory definitions and so forth, and I don't think that we necessarily need to do that. Specifically on the idea of identifier, I think it's great. I think we should consider that as something that would be like a must support, meaning send it if you've got it, but recognize that not in every instance will a person who is a care team member have an identifier such as an NTI. So it should not be mandatory or required in the sense that it needs to always be present. But if and when there is an appropriate identifier, such as the NPI, it's obviously extraordinarily helpful. So in that regard, those are sort of my two comments. But I think focusing in on the redundancy or overlap between this thing called care team members and now these two things would be an important issue for us to resolve and comment on.
Great. Thank you, Dan. We got lots of hands up. Leslie?
Yes, I think that the description that you just gave, Dan, assumes a medical model for a care team member. And we have a crossover, as you mentioned, providers. There's many of them. They may or may not have an NPI number. And we also have a crossover with care team members that are patients and their family members. Their extended care team, which becomes more and more important as we move more care to the home. So I think we need to look at both our care team members and perhaps the patient demographics or the provider fields and reconcile, rationalize, and include a more broad definition. I see that there's nowhere in here, for instance, even in our patient demographics that talks about power of attorney care team members who have that. And in these care team members, when we originally envisioned this way back when, was a holistic definition and not just a medical model. And that should be accommodated in these designs.
Well, could I just clarify, Mrs. Clem, on that point? Are there hands up? I mean,
there are hands up, Clem, but go ahead.
Well, the NPI is not restricted to medical people, taxi drivers. In fact, anybody can apply for one. So just to clarify that, it isn't intended. It's the only one around that's an actual ID. As I understand it, you could actually get a lot of people connected to, and it does not have to be a physician or a medical person or a licensed person. And it doesn't have to be somebody who bills to Medicare. You can apply for an NPI if you want one. So the point is, if you want to have an ID, I don't know what other ones it's candy, but Dan's point was you don't have to have an ID. You can put in a name, which is maybe the best you can do short of an ID. But it is not intended to exclude or to focus on the medical model.
And
so
I'll
say NPI, you don't mean National Provider ID. You mean any ID that did like meets a certain standard of identity proofing?
I mean National Provider ID. I know the word provider kind of gives it a bias, but in truth, it isn't restricted to anybody who's a provider. And Joe Blow can sign up for an NPI. And a lot of kind of unusual people do already, but it's mostly because they bill for Medicare. If you're going to have an ID, you got a big problem of creating one for everybody. Maybe people could have been their Social Security number, but they're not going to want to do that. So So
let me jump in here, if I may, and just point out to folks that when you look at the tab on the website, and I'd encourage perhaps all of you to just pull that up in the background, if you can, on another screen or something, and you look at the Level 2 tab, what you see is that there's a lot more detail that has been suggested for care, the data class of care team members. You know, today in version 1, it's just care team members. You know, I think that there probably is some lack of clarity there as to who or how much information, et cetera. I mean, I put in a comment, there's been a lot of concern from hospital nurses about showing their last name. You know, so I think there is some opportunity to clarify what are the details related to the data class. Within the data elements, you know, in draft version 2, they've added name and identifier, just generically, just any old identifier. Give us an identifier. If you got it, we'll take it. That's great. When you look at the tab for Level 2, you see that they've specifically been suggested DEA number for providers, provider location, provider NPI, provider role, which I think really gets at some of the issues that Leslie was raising, and then providers telecommunication information, you know, telephone, email, you know, address, et cetera. So I think those are all going to really flesh this out. Those have not been included in draft version 2. Draft version 2 really takes it a very small step forward, adding the name and an identifier if you have it. I personally think that having an identifier without telling you what type of identifier it is, you know, whether it's a DEA or an NPI or a, you know, an email address, I think it could be more confusing than helpful, because then systems, you know, will build an identifier for version 2, and then they're going to have to go back, hopefully, for version 3 and flesh out, you know, what all the details related to that. But I think we want to evaluate the items in draft version 2 in the context of the other items that have been proposed. I noticed there is nothing for care team members in Level 1, and I do see in comment level there was the addition of a data element called data steward. So I'm going to actually, I know I see a lot of hands up. I want to just take a second, Denise, if you can bear with me, to let Al speak up, because again, Al is the one whose name is on these new data elements as the submitter within draft version 2. So I think, Al, do you want to speak to kind of what you were thinking?
Sure. So, no, thanks for the reminder that I was the one who submitted those. The reason I submitted those was because I added a number of different data elements that were already part of various certification criteria, but did not have a place in USCDI. And provider, we talked about the priorities for adding elements to USCDI, one of them being gaps in concepts in version 1. And those provider data elements that were added are those that are required by other certification criteria. They're also required by other major reporting programs like CMS requires a lot of provider data in particular. And so those data elements were data elements that come out of other certification criteria. And if you drill down into each of them, you can see the original source, whether it's, and I don't, off the top of my head, I don't recall whether it's part of CDA or part of US Core as far as must support goes. The point, Grace, I think you made the point about it being medical model centric. And I think to one extent for the particular purpose of adding the provider data elements to USCDI, I think you're right. It is a medical model centric because that's the use case it was meant to serve. I think the idea, though, that Dan brought up about at least considering a data element called care team member name, care team member identifier, maybe, and even potentially care team member role, which is a Level 2 data element that didn't make cut. I mean, it's an interesting idea, and I think would make a great recommendation from the task force. I did want to say, though, that the reason that the provider data elements were put into the care team member class was to, because providers obviously are part of the care team, not the entirety of the care team, but it made sense rather than creating a new data class, which might cause more confusion and might require possibly duplicate data elements across classes. So having a care team member name and a provider name in two different data classes, to me, didn't seem to be efficient.
Thanks, Al. And I think you put out on the table a very discrete potential suggestion that we may want to consider, which is bringing care team member role from level 2 into draft V2, which I think would provide a dimension of context to address some of the concerns that folks have raised. Denise, you're next in line.
Thanks. Relative to the care team members and the discussion that's been going on, I think to the general public and patients, there's a lot of confusion about what does this USCBI mean? Does it mean that if this data element in the USCBI, that then as a patient, I can request that data electronically and receive it? Well, it's much more complicated than that because, if you think about it, the USCDI really applies to vendors' products who are part of the certification program. So if these data elements are in the USCDI, the vendor of certified health IT must support the collection, use, and exchange of this data and demonstrate that in real-world testing. It doesn't mean that the organization that implements that particular certified health IT necessarily has to collect the data unless the data is required by some other federal program, such as CMS, through some of their reporting programs. So I think in general for the public and even for some provider organizations and a number of CIOs I've talked to, there's kind of confusion around this and what it means when a data element lands in the USCDI. So I want to just add that there are many individuals that document in the medical record that beyond the physician. And as it's been pointed out, there's individuals that don't have NPI numbers. I wasn't aware until Clem mentioned it that you can get an NPI number if you're not a licensed practitioner. But I think we need to have clarity around the fact that there's more than just the physician that's part of the care team or the licensed practitioners. And I endorse the idea of recommending having a care team member name, care team member identifier, and then adding role.
Great. Thank you, Denise. Michelle?
Hi, thanks. So under care team members, I would support the type of provider ID because I think it's going to get very confusing. And a couple of other things to consider is I don't know if we're thinking of specialty or the type of staff. Because it is very useful in the long run to be able to know what specialty or type of staff, because just to support the person before me, there are many different kinds of providers. There's panel managers, there's nurse coordinators, there's teams that aren't here, like tumor boards, for example, that are weighing in as a multidisciplinary group to take care of a patient that I'm concerned we're not identifying. And those are the folks that are actually essential in taking care of a patient. So at a minimum, the type of provider identifier and maybe considering the specialty or a team. Finally, and I don't quite know where this belongs, but there's the care team member. There's also the facility in which a patient is getting cared for. So we need some kind of organization ID, as maybe it's the care team or maybe it's another category, but some sort of a facility or organization ID. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Michelle. And that's certainly come up, I know, in our organization as we are approaching compliance with the CMS ADT notification rule and trying to figure out how you actually document care team members when they are, as you say, teams or clinics or facilities. What's striking is, you said, I think you said the type of provider ID, is that right? So we've got provider name, we've got provider identifier, but Al, it's not clear to me, you know, without reading the whole thing, and I don't think it's there, that it says what type of identifier is this? You know, you include in level 2 NPI, DEA, so there are specific identifier types mentioned in level 2, but not just this notion of, you know, here's the provider identifier and here's the type of identifier that it is. Is that something that was considered? That's a question to Al.
I think, no, yeah, I was finding the unmute button. So we consider both ends of it. One is very specific, so that, you know, provider, if we're talking about the medical model provider, we're talking about NPI is the identifier that everybody, DEA can be helpful, but the NPI is more universal for providers in the medical model. But we recognize that we wanted to have other types of identifiers potentially, whether it's a community care organization, it's someone else involved with the care of the patient, or potentially the patient itself, although I don't see, and I could be wrong, but I don't see necessarily a patient having an identifier or a care team member, a family member having an identifier per se, but we wanted to leave it a little bit broader. So the question is, is the requirement for that particular element, does it include inherent to that data element a provider identifier? Is it inherent that if you have a particular number or alphanumeric that is that NPI or any other identifier, does it make sense that there's not that you'd have to say what kind of alphanumeric string this is, and say this is actually the NPI versus some other a TIN perhaps for a community care organization or a food bank or something like that, could potentially be a different identifier type. So to me, it seems like it's inherent to the particular kind of identifier that's used. That may be a false assumption, though.
So Al, I think I sent you an email separately. In the listing for the provider role, you call out two applicable standards. One focuses on HL7's NPI, and the other is a provider taxonomy from NUCC. And that second link is not working, still not working for me. And I think I mentioned that to you in an email. It'd be good to sort of refresh that so that we can kind of see what we're thinking about with regard to provider taxonomy. Because I think as we move towards, you know, the idea of suggesting inclusion of care team member role, it'll be good to know what that's bound to.
I'll take that one as an item. I know that I've had problems with the NPI link to HL7, the HL7 identifier value set, and I've had problems with that before, and I should get that. I will get that fixed. But the NPI, the NPI number is an element within of provider or practitioner. I think as practitioner is a U.S. core resource, but it is an element or a constraint on one of the attributes under practitioner.
Great. Before we go on with the raised hands, which are Hans and Clem, I've been told that Terry has joined us and wanted to sort of pause for a minute and hand Terry the mic and give him a chance to say something.
Great. Thanks, Stephen. And good morning, everyone. I wish it were better in different circumstances, but I'm calling in to say that I'm going to be stepping down from USCDI, and I will sorely miss working with all of you. This has been a great adventure, and it's only getting better, especially with the addition of the new folks on the task force. And I just want to thank you all for all the effort you're putting in. I think it's really a critical task, and one that will shape interoperability for years to come. And I especially wanted to call out the work that Al Taylor has done on all of this. It's been truly remarkable to take the concept of on deck and the USCBI promotion process and actually make it work. Just a remarkable, remarkable job. So again, my best wishes to all of you, and thank you for stepping in. I wish I could join you on this voyage, but you're in good hands. Captain Delane will steer the ship quite well, and my appreciation to Stephen for stepping in and doing all this. So thanks, everyone, and best wishes.
Well, thank you, Terry. There are a number of people coming in on the public chat, which I don't think that you can see. I think you're on audio only, but a number of people are expressing their thanks and best wishes. I want to tell those of you who are new to this that Terry and Christina Caraballo co-chaired the first two iterations of the USCDI Task Force with aplomb and alacrity and really did a wonderful job getting us to where we are today, where we have a draft V2. We had a process of getting here, and we're going to continue to evolve that. So, Terry, your work has been most appreciated and has really helped to move the industry forward. Can't thank you enough.
Well, thank you all. And again, best wishes. Thanks, Stephen.
All right. Sure. All right. I know Terry has important stuff to get to, so stay with us as long as you feel able, but Godspeed. Okay, let's jump back in. So we're developing some ideas around care team members, capturing that identifier, potentially adding in role, and potentially, if needed, and I'm not sure it is needed, but to me, intuitively, it seems needed that if there's an identifier, there should be a supplementary field to say what kind of an identifier is it, not just assume based on its string characteristics that it's an NPI or something else. Other thoughts about that specific to care team members? I'm sorry, Hans. Hans and Clem do have their hands up, so let's go to Hans. Hans, actually, within your comments, I'd love it if you could also put on your Cerner hat for a bit and speak as a EHR developer about what the lift would be to add these additional data elements in the time frame and constraints related to a new version of USCDI, because I think if we and or the public come forward and say, no, you really should take this thing that was leveled as 2 and bring it into the draft version 2, obviously, providers and health IT developers will need to support that and accommodate those changes. So go ahead, Hans.
Yeah, and I think my comment ties a little bit to that. And that's I get the sense that with the discussion around care team members, what to add, what not to add, should we have identifier types or not? The question comes is, what really is the purpose of the USCDI when I contrast it with USCDI and we have the FHIR US core and we have the CCDA specifications already there that to a greater or lesser extent on the number of these fields say you must support it either literally or that the cardinality is already one or and you have to be able to have populate it. So to what extent what is really the purpose of in that regard to adding provider identifier or provider name? If you already know that in the US core and CCDA, you need to have a name of the care team member, you need to have an identifier. And as you drill down further, I need to have a role. There's already identifier types defined in the work that's going on US core right now. There is the patient is a part of the member, the practitioner is, the organization is, and then in the next version that's being worked on right now, there's a couple of other ones that are being added to that you can support. Some of them must, other ones not. So what are we really trying to do here? Are we trying to lead ahead of the standard to indicate this is where you need to grow to, or reflect it? And if it's reflecting and we're trying to stay in sync with it a little bit more, then we could consider a couple of other things. To your question then, is that what would be the take-up of that? In light of what is already being developed in that context for CCDA and US Core, where we are referencing things that are already in the certified references, or in the references to certified capabilities and standards, that is already part of plans for those that are going to be certified. So as an example, if we were to want to add a role to the care team members, or you want to be specific about the identifier being NPI on a practitioner, that's actually already there. So anybody building out for that, it is not extra work in the sense of its new scope. It's work. It may not be there yet, but it's part of what's already there. So to me, I'm a little bit challenged on what to suggest, what not to suggest to putting UCDI, because are we trying to catch up with some of the standards that are out there that are supporting it? Or are we trying to start to get a little bit ahead of it in light of where we're trying to be? So that I have a much more basic question that started to come up.
I mean, Hans, I'll take a stab and then let Al give you the real answer. I mean, my sense is that we are reflecting the standards, that USCDI is meant to contain those elements that are well established, that have identified standards insofar as possible, that the vendors and the transport mechanisms are, you know, have been shown to support, and USCDI really kind of raises that floor of what everybody is expected to be able to, you know, access, exchange, and use. And it's pointed to by things like information blocking, CMS requirements on payers, potentially TEFCA. So it really sort of it's more of a following is my sense of it. But Al, maybe you can clarify further.
I agree that it's not necessarily that it is following in lockstep with what is evolving in US Core or in CDA. Those are, as you know, there's about six different certification criteria that leverage US Core or CCDA. But those aren't the only just what's in certification are not the only use cases for the use of US for USCDI or for its predecessor CCDS. Other programs, including programs that don't use certified technology or are required to use certified technology, are using USCDI as a reference. So we're trying to be mindful that we want to, you know, serve as we're not going to address every single use case with a new data element in USCDI, because that means that everybody has to do it, not just the people that are implementing US Core, you know, through certified technology. When other organizations or other programs reference USCDI, they would have to, like the users of that particular program would also have to use an expanded set, which is why we're trying to be modest in our step, because it is not only to address the capabilities of certified technology.
That's a very helpful, that last part is very helpful to understand, because at least I know for myself and others that I've been talking to is that comparing it primarily between USCDI and IUS Core or CCDA, because that's what we are focusing on to enable. But your perspective helps understand why it may at times not suggest something that actually is in those standards, but might be too big of a step if there are other programs that do not need to follow those standards and need to start to have an uptake. Appreciate that. That's very helpful.
Clem, you've had your hand up for a while.
I was just going to try to simplify. So the issue about having an identifier in 25 years of HL7 and I think most other standards, you got to have at least a code and a what code system. And so you could accommodate anything if you want. I mean, but there's two caveats. If you get into standard codes, it's relatively easy. But if you're getting into sort of hospital-based specific ones, and then you have to have a specialized ID saying which system's code it is, but you can do it. So there's no reason to limit severely the codes, and in some circumstances, you may want them to be very universal because of privacy for the provider, like a nurse who doesn't want their last name told. But But there's no problem. You just got to have two parts if you do an identifier, at least two parts. So don't forget that part.
I think we've certainly the provider ID type, and again, that as far as I can tell has not been called out as a data element in and of itself. And Al, I don't want to necessarily put you on the spot, but did you think that provider ID type was subsumed under provider ID when you added that to the draft V2, or do you think that was a missing element?
Well, just to clarify, that's usually considered a coding system ID, not a provider type ID in the standards world.
Okay. Coding system ID. And I assume that's also the version, right? You have to know the system and the version.
Correct. And that's pretty standard in the various standard systems that if you have a code, you got to have this other piece to say, you know, ICD-9, ICD-10. It was a disaster because, well, ICD-8 to ICD-9, because no one knew which one it was for that interim period. So from then on, everybody said, you got to have an identifier for what the coding system was.
So Al, back to you. Do you consider that to already be subsumed under the provider ID data element that we've got listed in draft USCDI version 2, or do we need to specify that more clearly?
So the assumption that it was subsumed, but I understand Clem's point about needing to the identifier is the string that is unique to the provider, but you need to understand that. But the identifier type, not the provider type, which is a whole different ballgame.
Yeah.
But the identifier type is the code system or the program system that produces that string. So I think that it's a fair point. That we can take a look at whether or not USCDI itself has to solve it or not, as opposed to solving it in other parts of implementation. I think that's something that we could look at.
Well, typically it's buried in the type, the data type. So if the data type is a codable data type, you got to have those other pieces. So you might be able to accommodate it that way without making separate elements.
I think I understand what you mean, Clem. So if it was to if it were just an alphanumeric string that starts with NPI, the letters NPI, that possibly that could be a solution. Although, or if it's a different codable system, you'd have to identify that.
Well, that's a longer discussion. Maybe we go offline on it. But basically, if you just adopted what's in all the standards, whatever you're talking about, you define a data type. And then that automatically specifies some of the sub pieces that might be needed or optional. It applies to patient names too, things like that. Maybe I'm getting way off into ether. So let me not keep going.
Okay. So we've cleared the raised hands. We have spent the bulk of our meeting focusing in on this care team members data class. We've come up with some pretty specific suggestions around clarifying about adding, it sounds like, the care team member role, bringing that from level 2 up into draft V2, and clarifying that the provider ID would also entail sending the coding system and the version. Anything else on care team members?
Stephen, this Hans on the coding system or the version, I think that will be later on as it's being refined, some comments back based on how that's being represented. But I just want to raise that that's not always being looked at as two separate concepts, but that's for later. Just a heads up.
Okay, good. And then there were some useful comments, Kelly and Leslie and others, about the fact that, you know, patient apps are obviously looking to pull this data from EHRs and other systems and they're also not certified. So again, these standards need to be clear. All right. We are still about 15 minutes away from public comment. I do want to, again, remind members of the public how much we appreciate your comments. And if you want to sort of get any thoughts together in anticipation of that, you've been most welcome. I also wanted to sort of, if I may, turn to Sasha to ask kind of the same question that I tried to ask of Hans, which is from a vendor perspective, how challenging will it be to add these elements, including the additional ones that we've been discussing and perhaps will be formally suggesting?
Hey, Stephen. So it's a good question. I'm glad that we're thinking about sort of the lift that would be involved across the industry. From the perspective of the systems developers, I agree with Hans's take earlier that the overlap with some of these data elements with existing standards that are already supported by many systems or that are part of USCDI version 1 and are sort of on the roadmap for systems will mean that it's a reasonable lift and we can expect continuous implementation of USCDI version 2 on top of USCDI version 1. We have, for example, alignment with some of the quality reporting concepts around encounters, and we have, you know, the existing notions of providers, as Hans mentioned, within US Core. Though I do think it's important for us to be clear to some of the earlier conversation about when we discuss these items, what do we mean? Because that lack of clarity or late-breaking clarification can certainly, you know, put a roadblock in the development and implementation process.
Thank you. And I think that point about insufficient detail, lack of clarity, hopefully folks will feel comfortable adding comments to that effect down at the individual data element level, because I think that's where we need it. So, like, I'm looking at, again, provider identifier. There's no comments entered on that page. So I think anybody who wants to go in, and I really appreciate people, you know, it's fine to comment ahead of our discussions. If you want to inform the discussion, that's the way that Dan and Mark and others have done. It's also fine to sort of wait till we have our discussion and toss in comments at that point if you feel like you've got your ideas well formulated. All right. So at the risk of breaking things up a little, I'd like to at least start the discussion of encounter information, realizing that we'll only scratch the surface and we'll come back to that ready to go next week. There was a comment that this information, thank you, Sasha, aligns with quality reporting issues. And I know that, Michelle, you know, you have a real interest in supporting that sort of alignment. Maybe, Michelle, you can start us off on the discussion of encounter information, both sort of the value of the addition of encounter type, diagnosis, and time, as well as, you know, any challenges you see with those or key elements that might be missing.
Yeah, thank you for that. I appreciate it. So encounter type, diagnosis, and time are important so that we can identify them. It's in many of our quality measures. A few things that aren't here that are also supportive of at least our ECQMs are encounter disposition. So, for example, if you're seen in an emergency department, what happens to you? Where do you go? Encounter location, that gets back to the organization ID, but the encounter location, and also the associated time period. So we sort of have time, but I don't know that it captures the entire time period. So those are things that are currently used in quality measures that aren't on here, but encounter information becomes really the way that you obviously describe an encounter. And it's not as simple as it sounds. An admission is not an admission is not an admission.
And again, when you look at the website and you look at the encounter information, we do have these three under version 2. Under level 2, we do have location and disposition, as you mentioned. So they were proposed and they were leveled, but not in the draft. Here again, we'll have a similar conversation that we had with regard to the care team members, which is to say, you know, was that an oversight? Was that a mistake? I mean, should we be pushing to pull location and disposition from level two up into draft V2? At the comment level, there is the associated time period, as you mentioned, as well as encounter subject status, participant time period, participant and identifier. So a lot of detail around the encounters got into each of the levels, not level one, interestingly. So I think that part of our opportunity here really is to identify items that are leveled in level two that were not included in draft V2, and to, you know, as appropriate, make arguments that they should be brought forward. Dan, I know you also commented about time period in some of your remarks. Do you want to add here anything?
Yeah, thanks. I do want to speak in favor of including this encounter information. I think it's a really welcome addition, hugely valuable for many purposes. Specifically around time, I was not clear on the data element definition of encounter time. Reading through the sort of narrative text there, it sort of suggests a mix of possible data types, sort of just a date, a start and end timestamp, perhaps a duration, you know, a period. And so I think when, as a general rule, it's nice to be able to identify the intended data type for these data elements to help clarify these questions. And as Michelle just noted, there is a lot of complexity, and it wasn't clear to me what exactly was the intent, whether we were just talking about, say, a visit time for outpatient or these more complicated structures, such as we see in post-acute care, where for sure the periods are important. So that was my main comment.
Thanks. Clem, your hand is up.
Yeah, this is both complicated and easy. I mean, there's nothing been standardized. I mean, for like 40 years, I think, that, you know, there's standard ways you report encounters for billing. And there's a lot more fields that have been, I think, are universal in the environment. And I don't know why we're being stingy in USCDI when the things are out and about already in, you know, so I think we should look at the standards, either V2 or FHIR, and enlarge it to ones that the industry is using consistently everywhere. And then we don't have to argue about how to do it. It's done. You may want to tweak it, but then you go back to the standards. I think this is almost silly to dabble around the edges as something that's so well long-term established. You know, diagnosis, you got to do. It's got to be ICD-10. Now, the encounter time, as Dan said, needs some specification because it could be thought to be the time in the ER, but it's actually, and typically in the standards, it's a date, or it could be a date range, or a date time range maybe. But so some of those things need specification, but we shouldn't be starting from scratch on this, and we shouldn't be so stingy.
Thank you. I will point out that in encounter time in particular, when you look on the website, did engender one public comment from somebody named Janice. I don't think we have a Janice on our call today. We might, but this is a good example of, you know, a question that came from the public trying to seek clarification on this. So again, I suggested, I think Michelle as well, that encounter disposition and location that found their way into level two might be appropriate to bring forward to draft V2 or to V2, I should say. And I think that speaks to Clem's point that, you know, if they're well established in our community and people are using them already, why would we be stingy? I like that word. So again, sort of back to our vendor representatives, any concerns about the practicality of expanding V2 to include location and disposition from level two? Maybe Sasha first.
Would those make sense in all contexts? I guess I'm trying to think if you have a disposition for ambulatory office visits, for example.
Yeah, we'd have to figure out what that means, right? I mean, I know when I do ambulatory office visits, you know, sometimes I'll say, you know, follow up, sometimes I'll say refer, sometimes, yeah, but there's not something that says disposition the way there may be in an acute care visit. So, but again, it comes back to this notion that, you know, if you collect it, then you must provide access, exchange, and use. But if you don't collect it, you know, does USCDI mean that you must collect it? Interesting, you know, a question that I think we still need a really ironclad answer on.
Yeah, I think in many of these cases, I would maybe want us to come to consensus on what we meant first before we assess the difficulty. You know, in a hospital sense, I guess the disposition might be quite established. I don't have a sense of what that would mean in an ambulatory visit. And depending on what we decided, it might have a varying implication for, you know, how ready it was to standardize that. I actually feel the same way about encounter time too. You know, hospital visits are measured precisely from admission to discharge. And even there, there's often a lot of complexity around the timing in the emergency department and so forth. That doesn't usually exist on the ambulatory side. And the sort of getting to the same level of precision around, you know, exactly how long a visit is not necessarily achievable in the same way for an office visit. So, you know, I think we want to keep that in mind as we assess these. They might have varying implications depending on the domain.
Hans, do you have anything to add to that?
Yes, and just to pick up one point of on the disposition that Sasha indicated, if you look at US Core where it's heading, next version that's currently being worked on, disposition would be under hospitalization, not necessarily other encounters. So that would be part of that conversation then to make that clarification, what's the scope of it. There's another comment I want to make, and then I'll put my EHRA hat on for a moment. As part of conversations there, and again, in progress, is that the notion of an encounter, do all systems have that? So there are many systems that do because of the way they operate, but there are also in certain settings that may not be totally in play in the way that we're thinking about it here and in a number of the interoperability standards. So to the question from an uptake perspective, there will be systems that this is very natural to do. There are also systems that that depending on how it works out between encounter and procedure information, they may have some more work to do that we don't understand exactly what that is. And what the expectations are. So just as a context, that the concept of encounter may not be as totally widespread as one would think, although quite a few systems do have the concept of encounter and have been working with that for a long period of time. So just a little bit of the balancing act that we're trying to understand a little bit better.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, Grace and Leslie are contributing here, and Shelley Spiro as well. You know, when you get outside of the hospital and the doctor's office, and encounters really do have different meanings, right? I mean, is it the face-to-face time? Is it the scheduled time? Is it the time that the provider actually came in when she was running late from delivering a baby, et cetera? And then, of course, when you're thinking about home care, when you're thinking about ongoing supportive care, community care, right, there isn't necessarily the same concept of an encounter. Having said that, I think we all agree, you know, back to Michelle's comments, that this is important stuff, that it's key to quality measures, that if systems do collect it already, as Clem pointed out, we shouldn't be stingy in adding it to USCDI. So, good start to that discussion. Everybody, please feel free to bring additional ideas next week and to add your comments at the bottom of the individual data class and element pages if you see fit. It is time for public comment, and we'd like to open that up.
All right, operator, would you mind opening up the public comment line, please?
Yes. If you would like to make a comment, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. A confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to take your line out of the queue. And for participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment while we pull for comments. There are no comments at this time.
Okay, thank you so much. Thank you again to members of the public who've joined us and have been paying attention. And again, we don't want you to be stingy with your public comments. It's going to be our word here, word of the day. With 4 minutes remaining, I'm not sure how much further we're going to get on the encounter information topic. Does anybody have anything else they want to share in that regard? All right. But again, I would like to dive a little bit deeper into that next time. And it seems like we might have exhausted ourselves in large part on that one. So we will also be prepared to discuss problems in the same way that Al was the submitter for the care team data elements. I'll in full transparency note that I was the submitter for the date of diagnosis and date of resolution. So I'll try not to be any more defensive than Al was in talking about those next week. We are scheduled to meet same time, same station next week. I hope that the weather is such that we have more people able to participate. Do make sure that you have access to the website so you can insert comments. Make sure that you have access to the Google Drive so that you can participate there. I and the ONC team will endeavor to finish off our notes from last week as well as this week and try to get those posted as soon as possible. I'd love to see those posted by the end of the week so people have a chance to look at them over the weekend. Any other thoughts, any sort of process comments, things that we should be doing differently or could be doing better in future meetings? If you think of them subsequently, feel free to forward them along either privately or to the larger group. Again, thank you, Grace, for joining us, for gracing us with your presence. And I don't mind ending 90 seconds early. I hope everybody stays well, and we'll try to get materials out to you. And Hans and Ricky, thanks for taking assignment. I know that was a little rash on my part. Happy to help facilitate that over the coming week. Everybody have a great day.
Thanks so much. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.